Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill speaks with Dr. Louis Algaze, Executive Director of Florida Virtual School. FLVS has long been a jewel for Florida's public education system, and in the COVID-19 world, its time has truly arrived. The online school rapidly expanded to be able to serve all of Florida's students, and Alaska's too. What will the new outsized role of FLVS look like in the fall and beyond? How is FLVS working with traditional public, charter, and private schools alike to address student needs? Those questions and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So today we're happy to have Dr. Louis Algaze, who is the CEO and president of the Florida Virtual School. So welcome to Redefined, our podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you're kind of new to your role. It may not feel that way, but I think a lot of people in the state are still getting to know you. So I thought we'd start off with a little bit about your background. I know you're from Dade County. And so just a little bit about, you know, what you've been doing professionally. And then your new gig, what's the challenges that you're facing with FLVS, and how's that going, what your responsibilities are in your new job?
Right, so over 30 years, I was in Miami-Dade County school systems, as you mentioned. I was an administrator for more than 20 years there.
Wow.
I was a teacher when I started. I became dean of students. Then I was a assistant principal for several years, a couple different schools. And then I was principal at two different schools. The last one I opened from its inception, I was the founding principal of the school, and I was there for about a dozen years, maybe a little bit more. Then I was tapped to do this job, and it was a great opportunity.
Why'd you decide to tackle this challenge? It's the largest, obviously largest public school in the country. It's a very unique public school. What caused you to say, hey, I think I'll try this?
Yeah, ever since I decided to become an administrator when I left the classroom, when you're a teacher in the classroom, you get immediate impact, but it's with that number of students that you have within those four walls. And, you know, in a secondary school, you have groups of kids coming through. So you'd have your immediate impact with that group of kids. So let's say 180, maybe 200 students a day, the same students every year. When I decided to go into administration, it was in order to have an impact with a greater number of students. So although it isn't as immediate an impact, a lot of the decisions you make, implementation of policy, creation of policy, it helps to guide students in the right direction and you have an impact on a greater number of students. As you go into administration, you are part of a larger administrative team. And you have, you know, your specialty in whatever areas that you're doing, let's say as an assistant principal, and you do the best that you can in those responsibilities in order to have as great of an impact as you can for the entire school community. As a principal, you get the opportunity to lead more and set more visions and follow within the school district whatever visions they have and work with a team of professionals to do that. And again, have a greater impact on kids and determine what types of things are going to be of the best benefit to the students and then implement those things. So when they talked to me about this opportunity, it's, you know, the entire state. I get to impact every student in the entire state because every student has to at some point take a virtual class here in Florida and beyond the state, you know, the nation and the world. So it's an incredible opportunity. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. Every time I think about it, I get goosebumps.
Well, of course, FLVS has long been a jewel in the public education system in Florida. And your time has now arrived.
Yeah,
obviously,
right.
Every kid in Florida is now homeschooling and doing online learning. And you guys have done some amazing things recently. I read that you geared up to serve 2.7 million kids by early May, 4 million kids by the fall. So talk to me about what you're doing now to put in place the kind of support systems to help us through the pandemic.
Right. So, yeah, no, when I took this job, the last thing I thought was that I'd literally be helping each and every student in
right.
the state of Florida. When this all started, you know, we've been in constant communication with the DOE, the FLDOE, obviously, since I got here, and a great partnership, great, you know, working with them. So as soon as this started, we got with them to see how we could help, because obviously this was going to be the way that all schools were going to have to go, as you know, they were closing down the school's buildings. So the first thing we decided we needed to do was get to the point where we could take the capacity for every student in the state. And we've been working with charter schools, private schools, public schools, all of them, in order to help them, again, meet the needs of the students. The first thing we did was get our team together, our technology team, and determine what we needed to do to increase our capacity immediately. By May 2nd, we got everything up and running, everything's in place, and we have the capacity for the 2.7 million students in Florida.
How do you see this playing out for FLVS? How is this going to impact what you do, how you do it? Obviously, in the fall, there's still going to be a lot of distance learning going on. They'll be dealing with social distancing in schools. You'll have classrooms where kids test positive, where they have to quarantine the whole class, so they'll all move back out. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of blended learning. What's your sense of how it's going to affect FLVS? What role you're going to play? What's that going to look like?
So we're trying to be, again, in a position to help everyone. So we're going to put ourselves in that position, and the districts can come to us in Florida and outside of Florida as well to see how we can help them. Within Florida, we're determined to make not just the capacity that we have. We've training teachers, for instance. We're working with DOE and thoughts in that area on making sure that every teacher in Florida can be trained, and we'll do it, to be accustomed to teaching on a learning management system, specifically ours, but a lot of that is a translatable skill regardless of what learning management system you're using. Some of the tips and techniques that they need in order to be able to teach in that environment. So we're ready to train teachers. We've been training teachers actually already. At the beginning of this pandemic, the commissioner and the DOE put in for teachers a stipend if they wanted to be trained on how to do this. And so far we've trained over 1,500, I believe, almost 2,000 teachers in this. They've completed the training, and we still have some that are in the pipeline. And we've committed to DOE to train the entire state, given the time to do it with lead time. So we're ready to do that as well, to train them on how to do it. We have the capacity, and up until from the beginning of this till June 30th, we've offered 100 of our classes for free, which covers K through 12, so that the school districts can take those classes with their teachers that we've trained and use it with their kids in order to continue learning. Crisis learning is not, distance learning is not necessarily online education. And what we have is online education. We have digital curriculum that takes a student from A to Z in an entire course content and takes them through them with engaging activities and helps them to get to a point where the teacher can intervene where they're needed to intervene with the individual student where they are at, help them with their specific learning gaps. And there's a group of kids with similar learning gaps, get them together and work with them. And that's what online education is. Okay. So we're trying to make ourselves available so that the kids can continue learning. And we think that's the best opportunity, the best position for them to be in, so that they're in a spot where they can continue where they left off, as opposed to trying to relearn everything they've already learned for three quarters of the year.
Do you think some of our instructional models might start to evolve? I mean, when my kids took FLVS courses, they were sort of separate from their brick and mortar courses. But if kids are moving back and forth, is there a future where FLVS teachers might co-teach with a brick and mortar teacher and try to make it easier for kids to think it's seamless between whether it's a home course or whether it's a brick and mortar course? You think some of that might start to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a demand by families that's going to be their choice. And we are, separately, we are a choice option, but it's going to be the parents' choice when the school year starts now what they want to do and how they want to handle this. From what we hear in terms of the health department and the DOE, the types of environment that might be existing in the future, obviously we can't know for sure, but they're expecting that possibly there'll be flare-ups here and there.
Right.
Maybe it'll be a school where they have to close down the school. Maybe it'll be for a few days. That's not as big a deal. If they have to close it down for several weeks, that becomes a much bigger deal. If they have to close down a feeder pattern because the brothers and sisters are going to the elementary, middle, and senior high, now you got more students involved in this closure and amount of time. It might be an entire school district. It might be several districts sporadically at the same time throughout the state. those types of scenarios can happen. And we've had conversations that have actually been brought up by some of the folks in the school districts where the best case scenario for them under these circumstances is to have a curriculum from A through Z already in place that their teachers are familiar with, and using the platforms and systems, which is where the teacher training comes in, that they're familiar with. And then they can go through that curriculum from A through Z. And if they happen to have to be out of school, well, the curriculum's still there. There's no loss of learning. The continuity of learning is still there. The teachers now know how to interact with the students online because they've been trained, and they can pick up where they left off. And then when they come back into the schools and everything's been cleaned up and they're safe, then they can pick up again where they left off when they were, you know, online and come back into the brick and mortar. And the curriculum can be, our curriculum is meant to meet state standards. Right. Our kids do extremely well. You know, our scores are on par, better than the state averages in all of our courses, most of our courses, and our AP courses, our advanced placement throughout the nation. We have a better performance on them. So it's good stuff. It's the highest quality that anybody can find out there. And again, as you said, I haven't been here since not an entire year yet, but I've seen very quickly, and having been on the other side, I knew it was quality curriculum. In my school, I had tons of students using Florida Virtual School for what they needed. And the availability is there for the teachers to start with the curriculum during the school year. If they need to do it offline or online, they can do it. And then when they come back in, they can blend with whatever else they want to teach. Whatever specific topic they want to add to whatever the curriculum is, but the curriculum is already there meeting the standards that the kids need to meet, and they're learning what they're supposed to be learning.
So, you know, you weren't exaggerating when you said you literally could have every child in the state at some point, you know, transition onto your platform. I mean, you could have 3 million kids next year participate in Florida Virtual School at some point during the school year.
Yeah, the possibility is absolutely there.
That's amazing. That's historic. I mean, that's just, it's mind-boggling. You know, nobody would have thought that 6 months ago. It's really amazing.
Nope. Wouldn't even cross my mind, to be honest with you.
So FLVS has always been a pioneer in lots of different areas. And I'm curious about how some of this stuff can continue to bleed over into traditional public education. You've been a leader in competency-based education. You know, as you know, you and I both had a long history in districts, school districts. I was in Pinellas, you were in Dade. But kids are sitting in rows. Everybody's learning at the same pace. You know, everybody's at the same time. And FLVS is very different. You know, some kids can learn quicker. Some kids learn slower. Do you see some of that competency-based philosophy beginning to bleed into district schools? Is that something that might start happening as we move into the future?
I think so. I mean, I guess probably the biggest barrier to that is the seat time requirements.
Funding mechanisms too, yeah.
Yeah, but the competencies and the standards, they're there. I mean, we all know what the standards are that we're expecting the kids to learn. So, and that's what we've done, is we've set up our curriculum to attack those directly. And right, you mentioned about the kids learning at their own paces. Some take a little longer, some take are much quicker. We are doing something that's been done over 100 years and putting them in rows and having them, you know, learning in that way and moving the kids at an average pace,
right,
where quicker ones are being held behind, the slower ones are being lost,
right,
and ones in the middle are doing okay. And this system does allow them our commissioner has a great saying that the most important thing in a student's education is the teacher, having a great teacher in front of them. This allows those great teachers to pinpoint exactly what the students need. This is a standard Johnny knows, then Johnny can move on to the next standard. Mary doesn't know this standard, let's work with Mary to get her to learn this standard and then get her to move on to the next standard. That group in the middle who was going to get it, and with my pace, I can put them all together and have them learn together as well. And they use the curriculum to go through all that. And the teacher intervenes where the teacher's needed, and it's individualized.
Yeah, we've been thinking about customized instruction forever, but we've never been able to figure out how to do it at scale. You know, so you always end up with sort of batch production because, you know, we never figured out how to scale, you know, individualize instruction. But you guys are doing that. I mean, you're starting to pioneer, and you have for years, how to use technology in a way that allows teachers to be able to customize instruction. So it's exciting to see that possibility expanded across the state. You also pioneered some very interesting funding mechanisms, most notably the idea that some of your funding is based on student achievement, which is pretty much unheard of anyplace else other than FLVS. So talk a little bit about that funding mechanism, and do you see any implications for that funding mechanism beyond FLVS as we move into much more individualized competency-based education?
I think the funding mechanism is great. It really holds us accountable. This is what the student's supposed to know. Make sure you're teaching the students what they're supposed to know. Right. So we have to make sure that we have put everything in place, and you know, we have the curriculum, but the processes that they follow guarantee, for the most part, that those students are going to learn what they need to learn. Whether it's from the teacher actually teaching with the students, whether it's our instructional leaders making sure that, you know, phone calls are returned. Right. Communication is the most important thing in this scenario. And when we're making sure that the communication is there, that the parents are called, contacted, and are involved in the education, a very important part, and each parent will get at least one touch point with the teachers, and obviously many more, communication with the student, and there are folks making sure that that's happening, and there's folks making sure that there's quality within the courses, right, and that there's academic integrity within the courses, and you're held accountable for it. That's, I think it's a great way to fund education. And when we talk about accountability, to make sure that you're being the most efficient you can possibly be and being effective at the same time.
Well, you're a former brick and mortar school principal. Would that funding mechanism, would that have had a significant impact on the school, on your schools?
It absolutely would. You need the resources in order to teach the kids.
Right.
And if you're not going to have the resources, you're going to have a harder time getting the students taught. So you need to make sure that you're doing everything under your power to have to get those resources. And whatever, when school grades came into being, everybody pivoted to make sure that they could maintain the standards they needed in order to get a decent grade on the school grades. That became the focus of a lot of what was done in schools, right, and because we're being held accountable now and it was being publicized for all to know. So that did make a lot of people pivot. If a funding mechanism were like that for all schools, then that would make people pivot as well. Now, to be fair, in brick and mortar world, there are a whole lot of other costs that,
right,
you know, that,
right,
that don't, right, exist in the virtual setting, buses and buildings,
right,
and,
right,
electricity, etc. Right. But for at least a portion of it to be there to make sure, you know, it's similar to the graduation rate when,
right,
when that was added to the school grade. The focus was now on what are all the elements that it takes to have a student graduate, and you've seen the graduation rates climb great since then. And we're talking about national graduation rate. I mean, many, many years ago, it was just a Florida graduation rate, which was calculated differently. And now it's a national graduation rate, a much more stringent rate to measure. And that had an effect on how. So, yeah, whenever those types of changes are made, you have to do whatever you need to do to make sure that you're able to get the resources you need to make the kids successful. And ultimately, that's what it's about.
Now, I remember 25, 30 years ago, we were always being made fun of nationally as a weak public education system in Florida. But
right,
over the last, 10 or 12 years, virtually every national study, particularly when controlled for demographics, shows that our system's in the top 4 or 5 around the country, sometimes higher than that. So I think you're right. I think a lot of these things, I was involved in some of these things, it was very controversial. But certainly when you give people a clear target to aim for and give them the resources they need, it makes a big difference.
Yep.
Well, exciting times today and exciting times in the future. So any last comments, anything I haven't asked you that I should have, anything like you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I think you're a very comprehensive job there you've done, Doug. We're ready. We're ready. We stand ready to help the state, the nation, the world. We have other things in place that we're looking to roll out for next year. We're looking to expand our CTE courses. That's something the state has asked us to look into. And so we're doing so. We have some ready to roll out at the beginning of the next school year. We're working with Cambridge University and the Cambridge program, to be able to be one of the pilots that they're having for offering Cambridge courses virtually. Talk about, we were talking about a 100-year process before. Now we're talking about a 600-year-old institution who's, you know, an epitome of higher education.
Right, right.
Not necessarily, and they've done great, so, you know, why change?
Right.
So they're piloting, you know, how it would look to have virtual classes and right. to see what effect they would have and what impact. From what we've done in AP, we know that we'll be able to do well with the ACE, the Advanced International Certificate of Examination, which is what Cambridge calls their right. their capstone course or tests, which are for college credits. So they've allowed us to go ahead and apply to see if we can go ahead and offer those courses. We're in the process of completing those applications so that we can start some in the next school year there, so we can get some additional college level opportunities for our students who might not have those opportunities in the schools that they're at now.
Well, all very exciting. And as I told you earlier, you're planning to rave reviews around the state. I'm hearing from legislators, DOE staff, teachers, parents, you're doing an amazing job. You and your team are doing an amazing job, and I just wanted to thank you. That's great stuff, so congratulations.
Thank you. It is the team. You hit the nail right on the head there. An amazing team at Florida Virtual School. I was very fortunate to get there and quickly learn how much talent they have, how much desire they have, how much passion they have for being the Florida Virtual School. I mean, it's a very great culture. We're looking forward to really fantastic things in the future. And as I mentioned to you, I thank you for the job you're doing and in opening, you know, knowledge of all the opportunities that are out there for the parents and their kids in the state of Florida and throughout the nation.